Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. This is the Radio Today programme, the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. In this episode, Trump and the truth, as we navigate our way through the fake news, the so-called alternative facts, and the palpable threats to journalists going about their business, how is radio facing up to the challenge?
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
We've got David Lloyd's Radio Moments 2, Stuart Clarkson's here with the latest radio news, and by popular demand, I'll have another battle with Alexa. But first to New York, and the former political correspondent of The Observer and former deputy editor of The Times, Nick Wapshot. He's been reporting on US politics and culture since 2001. He's a regular contributor to American radio and to the BBC. So, with apologies in advance for the slightly dodgy Skype line, he's well placed to tell us how the Fourth Estate is feeling under the onslaught of the new White House.
I don't think there's any doubt that we all feel slightly guilty for having missed the big story, which I mean, of course, it doesn't mean that we didn't cover Trump. It's just that we were also sceptical all along that it could possibly happen, a bit like I think that a lot of British journalists were completely blindsided by Brexit. They knew what it was all about, but they also held it in a sort of contempt, which in journalistic terms, I guess we shouldn't have done. We should have judged by what we were seeing. When the Trump campaign said, look at the numbers of people turning out for the rallies, we said, yeah, but actually that's a pitifully small number compared to the number in the state that you'll need. But actually it turns out that it did signify something, just like the last weekend's March for Women signified something. To get so many people out, it does mean that something's going on. There's a lot of rather unheard dissent going on. So therefore, I think we're slightly guilty. So we're slightly determined to do a better job reporting his presidency than we did report his rise, which I think probably a number of us are not quite ashamed of. But I mean, he didn't see a belt without hitting below it. There was no rule that he wouldn't break. And the weird thing about journalism, particularly political journalism, it's sort of transactional. You have to report it by trying to know what the motive of the source is. When it comes to Trump, we all got bogged down, I think, in chasing the lies when we should have seen the bigger picture. So anyway, there's that. But the other thing, actually, there's sort of an elation going on at the moment because of the prospect of news coming this thick and fast every day. It's an astonishing avalanche of news. It's not just the transition, but somehow it's more vivid this time. They usually go through on the nod, and every now and again people get picked off. But now each of us is trying to work out, how come that the administration is going to have about five different views of Russia, and all of them separate from the view of President Trump? So there's plenty to explain and there's plenty to report just now. So actually journalism is in a very good place because journalism is, for once, having maybe failed to prevent the election of Donald Trump by pointing out what a fraud he is and what a crook he is. You know, we will try better at trying to report exactly how this extraordinary, it's a sort of caravan, it's a circus. It's not a political campaign that any of us have ever seen before. And it's a mess. And they fall out with each other in public. And many of the people who represent the administration can barely talk in many respects. They're extraordinarily imprecise. Whereas if you've ever reported politics, you know very well that the meaning of every word is diagnosed and picked over. You can't get away with smudgy thinking. But because the president is a smudgy thinker, if he's a thinker at all, it means that all of his staff sort of, they're not quite sure what they're meant to be saying. Anyway, so I say, fascinating. We're actually in good dudgeon in a strange way. Leaving aside our political prejudices, and I would guess that most journalists tip to the left and would have voted maybe holding our nose for Mrs. Clinton, and very few real journalists, so quite a lot of sort of propagandist journalists worked in Breitbart or Fox News, places like that, which is a very different thing from a sort of middle ground objective journalism. I guess that most of us are rather looking forward to the next 4 years. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
We hear that Trump and his team might be taking money away from NPR. We hear what he says about and to journalists. Do you think that there's a real sense in which he could actually damage the whole business of a free press. I mean, I take your point that this could be a golden age of journalism, you know, that you could argue possibly the greatest American scoop happened during Nixon and Watergate and all that kind of stuff. So maybe you need a right-wing president to make journalism work harder. But on the other hand, he's got his hands on the levers of power, and, you know, it's surely within the bounds of possibility that he might be able to actually constrain investigative journalism. Is that a worry?
Well, it's even before they get to the sort of investigative stuff, which is all fascinating and so on, but it's actually, they haven't even got over the day-to-day, how to operate the daily press briefings, while this is being recorded anyway, we're on day two of the daily press briefings. And even just the basic rules that the press corps in the White House are used to are being broken already by the regime, who are tilting it in their favor. So the first questions on day one all went to sympathetic people like Fox News, Breitbart, and those sorts of people. And some networks seem to be punished. CBS wasn't given anything at all. This is not the way that these things are usually run. There's a lot of sort of tradition by which there's a pecking order and so on. And Trump's up. He's a disruptor. He disrupts everything, and he's upsetting that. But in the bigger picture, yeah, is he going to actually make life very difficult for journalists? Very difficult within the U.S. Constitution, because, you know, it's no accident that the First Amendment is the First Amendment. You know, it's the first thing that protects us from executive power. On the other hand, a number of presidents in the past have certainly put the feds on. The FBI have been put onto people. The IRS, the Indian Revenue, have been put onto people that they don't like. Nixon famously collected a blacklist. I've got all sorts of pals who are proud to tell me I'm on Nixon's blacklist, you know.
So just to pull you down to radio, I mean, I know you get interviewed and contribute to various radio shows in the US. There's been talk about funding for NPR being taken away because they're basically a bit lefty, or considered to be. Is that a legitimate worry?
Yes, it is, in as much as it's sort of real cheese-pairing stuff. They're talking about getting away from things like the National Endowment for the Arts, which is the sort of thing that funds museums and, you know, good projects for artistic things and so on, and also defunding NPR. But it would probably get replaced almost instantly by private funds. Now, one of the great things about the United States is that very rich people here are invariably very liberal. And they're also very liberal with their money when it comes to their favorite causes being downplayed. So I suspect that NPR would survive it even if, and it would be a mean gesture, it would be purely because, you know, you are the liberal elite and you're the radio for the liberal elite, or the TV for the liberal elite, and you watch Masterpiece Theatre and you watch Downton Abbey and stuff, in which case you're not at all sympathetic to out-of-work guys in age 55 in Michigan who used to work in the steel industry. So it would be a form of punishment, and it's certainly possible. It's been spoken of before. Even the wretched Mitt Romney, who now, of course, we think of as a wonderful moderate, actually he was in favor of what they call here in tabloid speak, killing the big bird, because Sesame Street appears on PBS. And so Romney was all in favor of killing the big bird. And there were all sorts of things. It's typical American politics. As soon as Mitt Romney appeared, there would be a guy dressed as a big bird who would then chase him wherever he went. So they do make it amusing here to at least follow and watch.
Are people genuinely worried about fake news and alternative facts and all these phrases we're now using? I mean, you and I are old enough to remember, obviously, Nixon and Reagan and all the anxieties that journalists had over those years. Is this really anything different, or are we just getting a bit over anxious?
Well, of course, I mean, it's always existed in a way. I mean, but fake news very often is intended as satire, or the difference between satire and fake news is a very fine line. You know, if you make up some cockamamie story about Mrs. Clinton and a pedophile ring in a hamburger joint, which they did in this past election, one of the Trump administration actually peddled that particular lie. But actually, a guy turned up with a gun in order to shoot people. So it is amazingly dangerous. But journalists for the whole part, you know, I mean, real journalists, I don't mean people who, you know, as Trump might say, the 400-pound guy who sits in his bedroom, you know, just typing nonsense into the ether. Real journalists do actually try to find what's going on and then tell someone else. And we're talking, anyway, journalism is sort of dignified gossip, really. I mean, you really need to know, but like every good gossip, you actually need to pass it on. And that's not what's going on with these fake news people. They're trying to see how many clicks they can get. But those sort of satirical elements, or the dangerous elements, crazy elements, are magnified, of course, by the social networks, which don't tell the difference between truth and falsehood, as we now call lies here.
Now, I'm going to just ask you this, because you live in New York, which is a very liberal and cosmopolitan and democratic town. When you go out of New York and you start listening to the radio in the Midwest and the Deep South, you don't hear a lot of political correctness there, do you?
No, you don't. In fact, you're very hard put to find anything apart from redneck, sort of semi-fascist radio. It's the old WUSA, if you remember that old Paul Newman movie. You know, these are real backwards people. And the fact is, there is no audience for people like me, so they don't even bother to do it. We were just talking, and it's probably worth winding back a little bit, about radio. Yes, I do quite a lot of radio here, opinion sort of stuff, where they allow you rather like this to drivel on endlessly. So even if Trump were to, going back to the point about Trump destroying radio as we know it, the fact is that it won't stifle the criticisms of him. Because, even if they were to manage to close down NPR, which would be impossible, as I say, people would step in. George Soros would step in with a single check. He would keep them going for another 10 years. But if that were to happen, I think that actually there would be quite a lot of lively stuff of left and right. But as you say, it's mostly geographic. But as we can see from the maps, you know, America is still a divided place, as divided as it was probably as in the Civil War. And the fissures are not so different. I know that it's an oversimplification, but the Civil War still hasn't quite worked itself out in this country yet. And the red-blue divisions are along those similar lines, I think.
Nick Wapshot, and once again, apologies for the quality of that line from New York. No problems reaching Yorkshire, though. Here's Stu Clarkson with the news.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. And more consolidation is coming with the news this week that Celador Radio is to buy the 5 stations owned by Anglian Radio. Radio Today understands that The Beat, Stream 100, North Norfolk Radio, Radio Norwich and Town 102 will all join Paul Smith's empire very soon. It's likely they'll be rebranded as The Breeze as well to match other stations in the group. Jeff Lloyd's leaving Absolute Radio after 18 years at One Golden Square. He and co-host Annabelle Port have announced on air that they're both quitting at Easter. Annabelle has been at Absolute and Virgin before it for 16 years as well. Changes are coming to Saturdays on Radio 2. We just don't know for sure what they're going to be exactly yet. Dermot O'Leary did his last Saturday afternoon show this weekend after more than 12 years in that slot. Rumour is he could be off to Saturday Breakfast, possibly in place of Sounds of the 60s, but no official word yet on that. The Radio 4 Midweek presenter Libby Purvis is leaving the station. She's hosted the weekly arts show for the last 34 years. Libby's declined an offer to present a new monthly programme when Midweek ends in the spring. The Forces station BFBS is coming off the national DAB multiplex in March. It says the decision's been made after an analysis of costs. BFBS says it can no longer justify paying to be on D1. The service, though, will continue as normal on other platforms. Radio 1's big weekend will be in Hull this year. It's taking place on the 27th and 28th of May. Acts already announced include Kings of Leon and Little Mix. Nominations are out for the Music Week Awards. Radio Station of the Year will be between Absolute Radio, Radio 1, One Extra, Radio 2, Six Music, Classic FM and Planet Rock, while the Radio Show Award will be won by either ADOT from One Extra, the Fresh Blood Show from Kerrang, Six Music, Steve Lamack, Radio 1's Annie Mac, Mr. Jam from Radio 1 and One Extra, Radio 2's Dermot O'Leary or Daniel Perry from Absolute. The awards will be given out at the Grosvenor on London's Park Lane on the 5th of April. And tributes have been paid this week to the former Piccadilly Radio sports editor Tom Tyrrell, who's died. He commentated on Manchester United games for many years from the start of Piccadilly in 1974, later going on to work across town at Century and also at Today FM in Dublin. And you can read some of the many tributes from people who work with Tom at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stu. David Lloyd's next, but Ian Martin wrote to me from Cheshire about my battles with Alexa. He suggests a regular feature. So, Alexa, play David Lloyd.
Shuffling songs by David Lloyd Jones.
No, that's not quite right. Stop. Alexa, stop. Try this one. Alexa, play Radiolab.
Getting the latest episode of Radiolab. Here it is from TuneIn.
Hi, this is Deanna Hegarty calling from...
Well, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? Alexa, stop. What we need is an appropriate piece of music to go with Trump's White House. Alexa, play Randy Newman's Political Science.
Political Science by Randy Newman.
No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, to be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
America First, 1970s style, from Randy Newman.
Phone calls, social media, SMS, email, codec control and visualization through the same interface. Phone box from Broadcast Bionics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Let's have another go at Alexa, play David Lloyd's Radio Moments.
You want to hear a station for David Lloyd, right?
No, okay. Let's just play it in, shall we? Thanks, Alexa.
Sorry, I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Marconi made it, and we love it. Radio Moments.
It's 42 years since Scotland's second commercial station arrived. So, who are you?
I'm Richard Findlay, the programme controller of Radio 4th, your new independent local radio station. This is not only a historic occasion for all of us here in East Central Scotland, but it's also a deeply moving one, despite the hour of the day. Because at long last, we here in the East have our own radio station. A station that belongs to us, and to us alone. A station that we can guide and shape. A station in which everyone can play an important role. A station that will listen as often as it speaks.
One of several rousing management speeches which used to launch the early local radio stations. Imagine being the jock having to follow on from that. You probably have to write something down.
Hello there, this is Steve Hamilton on Radio 4th, bringing you the Daybreak Show right through till 9:30. We're sitting at the top of the dial on top of the world on 194 metres in the medium wave band. 96.8 VHF in super stereo. We'll be bringing you news, traffic, weather, community information, food prices, tips and hints, and our Housewife of the Day. The Daybreak Show, that's where the action is.
I wonder how long Housewife of the Day lasted. The launch of Radio 4th, born this week in 1975. Now, let's squeeze in a quick BBC local anniversary. This week, 36 years ago, BBC Radio Blackburn launched.
This is BBC Radio Blackburn, serving you, the people of North East Lancashire, on 96.4 VHF. The time is 12 o'clock, and to introduce this first official broadcast, here's your station manager, John Musgrave.
Well, I'm sure many of you will recognise that voice, the voice of Tom Naseby, For more than 23 years, the BBC senior announcer in Manchester.
BBC Radio Blackburn, launching in 1971, it turned quietly into BBC Radio Lancashire 10 years later. The BBC Trust ends its reign later this year. And around 6 years ago, do you remember the BBC announced a series of cuts under the headline DQF, Delivering Quality First?
No major services will end, but with a 15% cut in the budget for sports rights and big reductions in spending on local radio, the cuts will be far from invisible.
And it was this week, 5 years ago, that the soon-to-be-extinct Trust asked the BBC to think again about local radio. It said that the impact of the cuts was regarded as having too great an effect on the corporation's ability to be distinctive in a local market. Radio 2 announced earlier this year that it was to cease live overnight programmes. And it was this week in 1979 that they began in the first place. It was all very exciting. In fact, the station even linked up with BBC Two Television.
I keep saying good evening, but to you I suppose it's good morning.
It's going to be very confusing, all this. We'll have to get this sorted out, I think.
Yes, I think you will, actually. And it's also a bit confusing, these television people, you see. It's all slightly weird, isn't it, when they're actually going to come over and talk to us.
Right, yeah. I think they're going to come over quite soon, aren't they?
I think fairly soon, actually. Yeah, they're handing over to us now. They've ground to a halt with their film. And what's the lady's name, the announcer? Jenny Bale, isn't it?
It is indeed, Ray, yes.
And she's going to be coming over to us any second. Are you looking forward to the show, Paul?
Very much indeed, Ray, yes. 4 hours. I don't know how I'm going to feel at 6 o'clock.
I think I might hang about and watch you. Thank you very much indeed, Jenny. Yes, I'm here in the studio carrying on with my show, The Late Show, but I carry on only till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the excitement really starts taking place then because it's Colin Berry who happens to be with me here in the bowels of the earth of the BBC Wireless Works in London. How are you, Colin? Are you looking forward to the show?
I am indeed, Ray. As we were saying to Radio 2 listeners a moment or two ago, 4 hours. I don't know what I'm going to be like at 6 o'clock in the morning, though.
Radio 2 with Colin Berry and Ray Moore, live overnight for the very first time this week, 38 years ago. Radio 2 has the longest period of continuous broadcasting of any national radio station in the UK. Stunts have been part of radio life forever, from the marathon dancers organised in the States by radio stations back in the 30s to War of the Worlds in 1938.
We are bringing you an eyewitness account of what's happening on the Wilmoth Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
In more recent years, back home, there's been Bank It or Burn It at Galaxy 105. Every stunt carries a degree of risk. In Australia, the ultimate lie detector was cancelled after a serious incident. And there was a fatal outcome to Hold Your Wee for a Wee in Sacramento.
How much water do you think you can drink before you have to wee?
Oh, dude.
Can't you get water poisoning and, like, die?
Birmingham was also the home to some worrying UK activity with the ill-fated Coolest Seats in Town on BRMB. But that station also brought The Naked Wedding, Housemates from Hell, and 18 years ago...
Nice day.
Right, nearly 20 to 9. Not long left now. Not much more torture to endure. Okay, so this is the deal then. You marry the complete stranger on Monday. You have got Monday free, haven't you? Just in case it's you.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to work or anything like that. Okay, good. So they marry the complete stranger. They won't have met until they get to the altar.
You see, the mechanism was station managed. All I did was to try and manage the media. Wow. I was mobbed by not only the UK media, the UK popular press, radio, television, 150 million hits, unprecedented for, you know, one radio station in one city in the UK to get this level of international interest. American television, prime time American television even. And it was the first reality broadcast. It really was the start of taking ordinary people and putting them in extraordinary situations.
Mike Owen reflecting on Two Strangers and a Wedding, which culminated this week 18 years ago. This week, 23 years ago, Brian Redhead died. He was a well-known presenter of the Today programme on Radio 4. Let's enjoy now this exchange with the then-Chancellor, Nigel Lawson.
Well, you've been a supporter of the Labour Party all your life, Brian, so I expect you to say something like that. But you really shouldn't sneer at these job clubs, which are giving real hope to the long-term unemployed, getting them out of their depressed state of mind many of them are in, and they are going on to get real jobs.
Do you think we should have a 1 minute silence now in this interview? One, for you to apologise for daring to suggest that you know how I vote, and secondly, perhaps in memory of monetarism, which you've now discarded.
Farewell, Brian Redhead, who died this week in 1994. So, with the death of BBC Lancashire's Joe Fish this week last year...
And this should get your toes tapping.
Christine O'Connell airing his first show on the original Virgin Radio 11 years ago.
Good morning, who's this?
FTP in Bristol becoming the first ever Galaxy 36 years ago.
These transmissions are in preparation for the new independent local radio service for the Bristol area, which will be provided by FTP as the IBA's contractor.
And the Radio Times poll suggesting Terry Wogan has the most attractive voice on national radio 15 years ago.
There he was. Managing Director of Radio, collecting the old milk bottles as in days of yore.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. Thank you, David. Thanks to Nick Wapshot, Stuart Clarkson, and of course to you for listening. Do join us again next week. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.